Campus Beart li ta' Punzaba jipprezenta Colin Fitz jistaqsi kull nar ta' sibt u kull nar ta' ħadd. Jiena Colin nistaqsi mistoqsijiet pertinenti lin-nies li jew jagħmlu xogħol interessanti, jew għaddew minn xi avventura, jew ippubblikaw xi ktieb illi nħoss li għandu jinqara minn ħafna nies. Forsi żaru postijiet imbeda u ta' min nitkellmu dwar dawn il-vjaġġi. Suġġetti varji li jiena ċert li jinteressawkom is-semija ta' Campus 103.7 Colin Fitz jistaqsi nhar ta' sibt fl-erba u nhar ta' ħadd fit-tlieta ta' wara nofsinhar. It is with great pleasure that I have with me on the line Renzo Spiteri, a Maltese musician who has been based in the Shetland Islands for quite a few years, and I'm sure has a lot to tell us about his life and his experiences in different countries. Welcome to the program, Renzo.
Hi, Colin. Thanks for having me. It's great to hear from you.
You and I have been together in various musical theatrical productions over the years. People will remember here in Malta Voices or the musical Rock of Ages and the Teatro Unplugged shows. You've maintained a link with Malta, but for many years you've been building up your career as a percussionist, and now, dare I say, you're quite world-renowned?
Well,
sorry to stick it on you like that, but it's the truth.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I leave people to judge on that. Yes, but I've sort of worked hard to sort of spread my wings as much as I can through a lot of work, and also my great passion for music, anything that sound related, and what the world has to offer, really.
Indeed. And you've also collaborated with many artists from around the world, creating new sounds and exploring the percussion of different countries. And you also have a passion for the earth, I think. Nature.
Yes, very much so. I think it's become a big part of my creative practice, especially over the past, I would say, 10 years or so. Where the link between sounds from the earth and my music are sort of merged within a creative process to create stuff, mostly for solo projects and solo performances, but also when collaborating with other musicians also. And perhaps we could elaborate about that further during the interview.
Indeed, we definitely shall. But let's start off with a point that definitely proves what we've just been talking about, the international recognition that you have received. Not so long ago, you were nominated for an Emmy Award for Outstanding Sound in a Documentary. Am I correct?
That's right. That's absolutely right. And I'm so chuffed.
I would think you're one of the first Maltese to ever be nominated for an Emmy Award. The Emmy Awards are the American Oscars, Academy Awards for television. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right.
So tell us a bit about this nomination. This is amazing.
It is. Well, it is. Yeah. It's a story which started back in November of 2022, when I started working with the film crew who were producing this amazing documentary, and it's a great story between Billy Mail and this author. Billy and his wife Susan, and it's a great story. For those who haven't seen the film, I would highly recommend it, because it really speaks volumes of how the human and animal world can really communicate at the most unexpected instances in life, and how much they can give to each other. But anyway, so
the film is called Billy and Molly. Is that correct?
Billy and Molly, an otter love story. That's the complete title of the film itself. So way back in November 2022, I was contacted by the producer of the film to work with the crew as the sound recordist of the film. And I mean, that would entail me being around with the crew to record a lot of the ambient sound, but also being given like a shopping list of sounds that the director would need. Like, I don't know, we need to have the sound of a spring or water running, or the sound of sounds from underwater, or bird calls, or otters, or whatever it is. So you have to go around and glean these sounds and collect them from different parts of Shetland to develop the narrative from a sonic point of view, I would say. So it was really great to have this chance to work with people like Charlie Hamilton, who is one of the finest nature photographers, and he's been working with National Geographic for many, many years, and his job has taken him around the world. And Jeff Wilson, the producer, I mean, he's one person who has been responsible for great documentaries, including working very closely with David Attenborough, and a whole crew of really, really wonderful people. So it was an amazing and enriching experience. And obviously, I mean, apart from other nominations, like the product as a production team, we also had a BAFTA nomination, but then having this Emmy nomination for my work for the sound for the documentary was really, really, really great.
Absolutely. And it was broadcast on the National Geographic International Channel. And we all know the high level of the high quality of documentaries that are broadcast on this channel, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was like almost 2.5 years in the making, the whole thing. So it just goes to show how much work is involved in producing something which is, I don't know, I can't remember the running time, that's about 80 minutes or so, but there's so much detail and there's so much work, be it underwater photography, and you need to have a crew for that. Billy and Susan, who have built this relationship with this otter, who gave a lot of their time, and having a crew being around your house and being around your home and your land to film Molly the otter, of course, is very demanding in itself. And then there were people coming and going out of Shetland, so they would come to Shetland, spend months living here, and then they would go away, and then maybe a new crew would come in, or people from that same crew would come back and continue filming. And this went on because it was very important to capture the different seasonal aspects of Shetland, from the harshness of winter to, when we're lucky, having some really beautiful summer days. So it was very important to capture it in this total essence, so to speak.
So, Renzo, as we're saying, this documentary has really put you on the map, shall we say, regarding your musicianship, but also your composing abilities and your vision for sound, for music, for on screen. So well done for this project. Where can people watch this documentary nowadays?
It's still showing on National Geographic, and I think on Disney Channel.
Can be
also
streamed. Okay, it can be streamed.
Yes, and it's done quite a tour of film festivals and gained a lot of recognition and quite quite a few awards, which is always very, very, very rewarding.
Wonderful. Billy and Molly, an utter love story. I remember a few years ago, people were talking about that octopus documentary. So this is sort of in the same league, I would assume.
Yeah, I think the beauty of it is that there's a certain simplicity in the film. What emerges is how much Billy, how generous Billy was in his time to save this otter, which he just came across. It was very weak when it just climbed up onto the pontoon next to his house, and Billy caught sight of this otter, who he then named Molly, and it would come and go, and obviously, I mean, maybe something that people might not think so much about is the fact that when you're working on something which is a nature documentary and you're dealing with animals in the wild, you can't really program your day and schedule your day and say, okay, our call for tomorrow is 8 a.m., make up at 6:30, and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
It's so dependent on the animal's behavior. So there would be times when Billy would be out on the lookout from the shores and seeing whether on that particular day Molly would come around or not. And if she's not there, then people would have to walk around the shoreline and see where she could be, and then maybe catch a glimpse of her and film those bits and pieces. So that in itself is quite a challenge, because as I'm saying, you can't really program your day. And sometimes it can happen that it's really one of those nights of like strong blizzards and Molly just turns up, and all of a sudden the people have to be out and catch some footage of those instances.
Yeah. Well, this is quite amazing. So congratulations on that nomination. As regards Molly the otter, now you come from Malta. You're originally from a hot Mediterranean island, and you've moved to a cold North Sea island, Shetland, just north of Scotland. It's a group of islands. Very cold in the winter, especially, as you said. You even mentioned blizzards. And I don't think there are otters in Malta, are there?
Not that I know of.
No. It's an amphibious animal, isn't it? Is it an amphibian or a mammal?
It's a mammal.
It's a mammal. But they do spend a lot of time in fresh water, don't they? In rivers and...
In the sea.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm not aware that we've ever mentioned otters in our science classes or geography classes here in Malta.
No, I don't think geographically it's an area that would attract otters, really. I think it's a bit too warm for them.
Okay. But to find out more about Molly the otter, we'll watch the film. Let's talk about you and moving from Malta to these islands. The Shetland Islands, which that's a big step.
there was, I would say, it was a progressive thing, really. So the move from Malta wasn't directly from Malta to Shetland, really, because when we moved from Malta about 12 years ago, originally, we moved to Kent. I just needed to be very close to London because of work, but I didn't want to be living in London. So we were living in a very small village with a really convenient train connection, because within an hour or so, I was right in the center
of London.
Yes. So that is where it all started. But eventually...
We're talking about around 2013.
So that would be it. So eventually, it was like this move going further north from Kent, While I was still living in England, I had done my master's in sound art at Oxford. And from there, while I was doing my master's, is where really I discovered the existence of Shetland. Mm-hmm. And I was intrigued by these group of islands, because although I was working and studying in Oxford, I was looking to work on my final master's project in a rural part of the UK. And I remember one evening, me and my wife Gabby were looking at this map, and there was this little speck of island, and I was wondering what those islands, which are part of the UK, would be like if I had to go and work there for my final dissertation project. So I did a week or 10 days of sort of orientation, and at first I was pretty taken aback by the absence of activity. But after a couple of days, you kind of tune into the place. And I found out that there were so many interesting things that happened, but you just need to give time for these things to emerge. So it wasn't that immediacy, like living in a busy city, you know, like Oxford or London or wherever else, where there's this continuous activity going on. There was this transparent, almost transparent texture of sound and activity. And it was like, wow, this is challenging, but challenging in a nice way. So I spent a couple of months there on in Shetland, and went back to Oxford, but kept thinking about the place. And we said, what if we had to go and spend some time there? And 6 years on, we're still here.
Wonderful. Let's take a little break and listen to some music that yes. I've asked you to suggest for this interview. We're going to hear two pieces. We'll hear one, the second one later on. Let's start off with the first one of your suggestions. Could you tell us something about it?
So the first one is Drift Into an Elsewhere, the title of the track, which is taken from our most recent album, which carries the same name, Drift Into an Elsewhere. And it's very much inspired by what I was just talking about, which is this transparency of movement and sound around the islands of Shetland. And I was very much inspired by this sense of space and calmness to compose a set of pieces. And for the first time, I actually wrote also for a string quartet, which is something that I've been wanting to do for a number of years. So I thought this would be the right situation and occasion to do so. So it's all sort of this kind of music which has this slow evolving texture, I would say. And also, it was very important to me to create a kind of quiet and contemplative sonic experience while people are listening to this album. So it's a combination of the string quartet, my percussion. I use also some electronics, but I also use a lot of field recordings, which are recordings that I take from around different parts of Shetland to create soundscapes. And there's also some elements of spoken word. Also, I wrote some bits and pieces which were included in it. So this track is called Drift Into an Elsewhere.
So we're going to hear a part of Drift Into an Elsewhere by my guest on the program today, Renzo Spiteri.
Thank you. this is a time to celebrate the small victories. Very often we only celebrate the big milestones, the big things that happen, but this is a moment to celebrate everything, all the good stuff. Because you know that sometimes even these small things right now that we're accomplishing, they're taking a lot of effort and a lot of courage and a lot of boldness to make them happen. So it's good to celebrate them.
So we're back from listening to Drift Into an Elsewhere. How many albums have you released over the years?
Not many, because I'm more of a live performer than spending time in recording studios. But there are five albums in all that I've released with my music. I've collaborated on albums of other musicians. Finding time to be in a studio and do my thing has become sort of more of a focus as of late, because I'm finding that it is actually quite rewarding to spend time in a studio and just think and contemplate about building something which is there to stay, rather than performances, which sometimes can be more like fleeting moments. It's actually six albums and not five. I correct myself.
And for people, for listeners who want to introduce, to hear more of your stuff before they maybe go out and purchase the CD or vinyl or whatever, your music is also available on Spotify. So
on Spotify, on SoundCloud, on Bandcamp. I mean, all the more common platforms,
indeed.
Yes.
So, Renzo, tell us a little bit about the Shetland Islands. Mm-hmm. Which one of them do you live on? And let's have a bit of a comparison between the island of Malta, where you're originally from, and the island you live on now.
Okay. So Shetland is like, it sounds like a working base for me, because obviously I spend quite a chunk of the year away from here, because I work in different places and different countries. But it's a good working base, and I live, so there are 16 islands which are actually inhabited, and I live on the main island, which is the biggest of islands, which is called Shetland, because all the other islands have got their own name, of course. Mm-hmm. So Shetland Islands is sort of the collective name, but Shetland is a main island. And in all, Shetland's population as the whole islands is 22,000 people spread over 16 islands. So you can imagine how much space people have.
Well, how big are these islands? For example, the main one, Shetland, is it much bigger than Malta?
It's five times the size of Malta.
Wow. And the population so small, my goodness.
Yes, yeah. So if we had to go by comparison, that would be one of those really sort of at extremes situation, where Malta, with its population and the density, And compared to Shetland and its very sort of sparse population. I mean, and when you consider that out of these 22,000 people, 11,000 of them live in what one would categorize as the one and only real town on Shetland, and there are 11,000 there. Oh. So the remaining are spread all over, I would say. So there's always this sense of space, and there's a lot of it's very quiet. So people might love it, and some people might actually hate it. Well, it really depends.
It depends on the character of the person, indeed. If you like to be surrounded by sort of the latest stuff and activity, then you probably wouldn't enjoy it so much. But if you're seeking peace, and communion with nature and a slower pace of life, it sounds like paradise.
Yeah, and there's a strong sense of community also. I mean, people tend to be very, very helpful, and you make friends and connections very easily.
Were you welcomed? Because, did you feel you and Gabby or your wife made welcome immediately?
Yeah, Gabby and myself. Yes, very, very, very much so. I mean, especially because you're coming from elsewhere. I mean, people do appreciate that. It might take some time to actually integrate within sort of the mode of living, and one needs to adapt to the conditions of Shetland, even from a weather perspective, because we do get these very long and dark winters, where obviously, because we're in the sub-Arctic region, our winter days are mostly in the dark. We get very, very little light during the peak of winter, which can be challenging. Not for us, though, I would say, because in summer then we get like these full days of
sunshine right up till late at night.
Light.
Yes. So a little bit like Iceland or Scandinavia, what we hear about.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
When you consider that we have 19 hours of sunlight in summer,
and then
it's, you know, I mean, it's quite so there's quite a nice balance, and in a way it kind of reminds me a bit of what Malta felt like in my childhood, when we were still running around in the streets and sort of playing outside, and there was, at least where we used to live, there was very much of this community spirit, and people would just visit each other. Mm-hmm. And if you've baked a cake, you might just take half of it to your neighbor.
Where was this, Ransom? Which part of Malta are we talking about? And this is when you were a child in the late 60s or 70s, I'm assuming.
Yeah, in the early 70s. So we used to spend our time, we used to share our time between living in Blatalbayt, and in summer we used to go down to Brzabuja, when Brzabuja was a very different place. Nowadays, it's a very busy summer place, but in my early childhood, I mean, we would be out and about most of the day, just running. There wasn't even this huge sandy beach that there is nowadays. It was just a few rocks spread all over, and you'd have to really negotiate with, in this kind of balancing act, hopping from one rock to the other until you can eventually get to the sea and swim there. So it was really beautiful, and it kind of reminds me of that very safe environment where we wouldn't lock our doors at that time. And here in Shetland, we never lock our doors of our house. We never lock our car, you know, we never do those kind of things.
We mentioned swimming, Renzo, I have to ask you, even though you have these long days of sunshine in the Shetlands, on Shetland, in summer, I assume the sea is still very cold to swim in the summer months. Can you still swim?
I mean, we live right by the sea. We can't be closer than the sea because our house would be right in the water.
Wow.
But I tell you, I mean, I've tried, but at least for us, being Mediterraneans, it's so cold. I mean, locals do swim, but swimming here has got a different sort of, it's a different idea. We go out and swim and you spend like 45 minutes, 1 hour out at sea and you swim and you're snorkeling and doing this kind of thing. Here, people, yeah, swim for a much shorter period of time just because the water is really cold even in summer. Mm-hmm. It's either that or I've seen people here who would actually still wear a wetsuit in summer and swim, even if it's just for 10 minutes, you know? Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, in the 6 years that we've been here, we haven't yet built the courage to take the plunge, literally.
But what about communication? I mean, how do you get from the mainland, which is the top part of Scotland, I believe, yes, to Shetland? Is there a ferry? Is it flights?
Yeah, you can get. So there are, communication is really, transport is very good, actually. And you can fly from Aberdeen to Shetland in 35, 40 minutes and you're here. Or also, if you can take the ferry for a 12-hour trip, it's also a great way of traveling because it's an overnight sea journey.
12 hours, so though. It's quite distant.
Yeah. It's quite, of course, yes, it's quite a distance because we're kind of closer to Norway in a way. Mm. And also, I mean, we connect to Glasgow and Edinburgh also. So like in my case, I'm in Glasgow very, very often for work. I work mainly with musicians from there. So there's very good connectivity for us to be there and work there and work here at the same time.
Mm. I'm speaking to Renzo Spiteri, a versatile multi-percussionist, sound artist, composer, sound recordist, and interdisciplinary arts collaborator. Started off here in Malta. He's Maltese, now been 6 years on Shetland, one of the Shetland Islands, and has been living in the United Kingdom, which Shetland forms part of, for 12 years. Renzo has performed on stages and in festivals in Europe, Asia, the Americas, Royal Festival Hall in London, the United Nations headquarters, Dublin, Istanbul, Berlin, the Festival of the Desert, the Faroe Islands. You've been all over the place, and there's much more to come, I'm sure. So I'm just giving an idea to our listeners about your experience. And as I said, his music is available on Spotify. We spoke earlier about a BAFTA and Emmy-nominated documentary, National Geographic documentary, that Renzo provided the music for, Billy and Molly, an otter love story. And we're talking about Renzo moving from tiny and Mediterranean and bustling Malta, which Renzo was telling us he's seen change over the years from his childhood in the 70s to today, and to a very remote and quiet island in the North Sea, Shetland, with a very small population. So there isn't the equivalent of, I don't know, Valletta, a nightlife. What do you do on your days off in Shetland?
Well, we walk a lot, we cycle a lot, we tend to spend time with friends, either inviting friends over for dinner or going over to friends for dinner. I don't know, doing the regular things like going to the cinema. If in summer, we love to go out with our kayaks and explore the really spectacular coastline of Shetland.
Do they have the traditional British pubs maybe for the occasional pint or sort of socializing, or does
not? I mean, there is one pub, really. But people tend to be more sort of family oriented, and they like to have people at home. So, and we like having people at home, and us being Mediterraneans, obviously we like to cook Mediterranean foods for our friends here, which they appreciate immensely. So we do, we always carry that Maltese and Mediterranean element with us, which we're very proud of, really. And people are always very interested to know more about our culture, our upbringing, our environment in Malta. So it's always an interesting conversation, sort of this dual aspect of being Maltese and being here.
Well, this is the point I'd like to get to now. In fact, probably the average Maltese person knows about the United Kingdom, but it's probably not so aware of the Shetland Islands, vice versa. Does the average person on Shetland, people you've known, people you've got to know, were they aware that Malta existed, and what's their average perception?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite amazing how quite a number of people in Shetland know of Malta, or actually have been to Malta, because they come to Malta for the sea, for the hot summers, for its history, for its archaeology. You know, there are so many beautiful things in Malta. Yeah. So we've met quite a few people who say, "Oh, I've been there." Some people like would say, "Just last summer I was there," or people who have repeatedly gone to Malta for visits during the year. So yes, I was going to say probably there are more Shetlanders who know about Malta than Maltese know about Shetland, but I don't know so much about that, so I'm not too sure. But I know for sure from the people who we meet and talk to here that, yes, they absolutely know of the island, and some people have visited and have enjoyed it and have gone back.
What do the people of Shetland do in general? I mean, what kind of jobs?
I mean,
tourism, perhaps?
Well, tourism, yes, but there's a certain kind of tourism. I mean, people, the tourists who come here are more the nature lovers who either come with their camper vans or stay in Airbnbs, and who love to go out for walks, who know that we have very mild summer, so you can spend the whole day of walking in summer and not break a sweat.
Fresh air, nice.
Yeah, fresh air. But because of the sea, there's also there's industry connected to the sea, and Shetland is a good linking point for Scandinavian countries who use Shetland as a base before connecting to mainland Europe, perhaps. So there's also that kind of commercial activity that goes on.
So are there people from Scandinavia who also live there? What apart from, you know, you and Gabby, who are from Malta, the immigrants, the people from outside of Shetland who have settled on Shetland? So there's the Shetland people, and who you can consider British because it's part of the UK. And then there's you and Gabby. And what other nationalities have you encountered living there?
Surprising. I mean, it's quite an interesting spectrum, actually. People from mainland Europe, from South America, from America, from Asia, from Australia. Quite an interesting mix. And it's also interesting to hear people's stories of what made them choose to move to Shetland, and they all have their own very interesting stories. And it's always very interesting because you come across so many wonderful people from different countries and their own culture who do bring something new to the island also.
And what about the language, the accent? Sometimes when I meet Scottish people, the further north you go, I, as somebody whose English isn't my first language, being Maltese, I find the Scottish accent a bit hard to penetrate, at least until I've been listening for a bit of time. But what kind of accent do people have in the Shetland?
So it's not actually an accent, but it's actually a dialect that they speak, and it has a lot of the Norse influence.
Also,
that you can find it also in street names and village names too. So it can be a bit difficult at first, but once you get used to it, and people tend to encourage you to not learn but understand at least. But because of the Viking history and the link with Norway, there is so much of this Norse influence within the dialect that people speak here, and it sounds quite beautiful actually.
But so if you're on a visit, getting by in English is okay. But if you're going to be staying there for a length of time, it's advisable to try and pick up some of the language.
Well, not really, because I mean we just speak English with our Mediterranean accent with folks here, and if they don't know you, they might say, sorry, where does this accent come from? And some people might link it maybe to Italy, or some people think it's French, or I don't know, some other countries.
I've been told Wales
okay.
Sometimes because of the sing-song element in our
but in general, no, I mean
people actually, give you space.
And people tend to not impose their dialect on you, and they try to make it really easy to for them to communicate with you, and for it to be an easy to way communication process.
It sounds really laid back and peaceful and pleasant to me. I mean, people don't seem to be sort of highly strung or sort of upset about outsiders coming to live there, like sometimes happens for whatever reason in other places.
I think because the population is so small, and obviously there's that sort of fragility to it, just because it's such a small population. I mean, people here are always very welcoming when people move here, because in some way or another they're going to generate some interesting ripples within the community, within the social fabric. So there's none of that, I don't know, protest or negative connotation to people moving in and out of the place. I mean, people are pretty cool about that.
Let's hear the second bit of music that Renzo has provided for us and suggested that we play during this interview.
So the second one is sort of more of my more experimental side, I would say. So this track, which is called Nordic Resonance, part 3 of Nordic Resonance, is actually a live recording from the launch of this new project that I'm working on with a excellent flute player, friend of mine from Glasgow, Richard Craig, and we've recently launched this project, and we're continuing to work on it, and we'll be playing in quite a few different places, including Malta next year. On the 30th of January, we'll be at Spazio Creative playing a live performance there. So it will be a nice return to Malta. But anyway, back to the piece itself. It's quite an improvised piece of music, meaning that we don't really agree on what we're going to play before. But in this particular piece, what I wanted to do is have this layering of stuff that we've been talking about, which is the live performance of myself on drums and percussion, Richard, who's playing flutes, and also elements of field recording of a particular bird that migrates to Shetland during the summer months, which is the tern. And the terns are very, very interesting birds, in my opinion, and I'm very fascinated by them because they're these small birds with so much energy in their flight. They have this sort of almost random erratic behavior while they're flying, because they're always chasing and diving for fish. The two species that I know, because I can't say I'm an expert of birds and terns, but we have the common tern and we have the Arctic tern, and the Arctic tern crosses from the Arctic to the Antarctic and back, and that's like 90,000 kilometers of flight per year. And I wanted to include their bird call because it's such a particular call. So when people listen to this recording, they're going to listen to these really sharp shrieking sounds, which are recordings that I've done of these terns. And I wanted to build a piece around this aspect of nature and Richard and myself working around this texture, almost imitating this harshness of their call. So this track, Nordic Resonance, part three, because there's a part one, part two, and part three, so the music is like in three movements, is the next piece that the listeners will be listening to. Thank you.
Brent Ospiteri, together with his collaborator Richard Craig. And you're going to be performing that piece of music in various countries, including here in Malta, in January in 2026. At the theatre known as Spazio Creatif. So looking forward to that, Renzo. And
very
it will be
much,
nice to see you again. But in fact, let's talk a little bit about Malta before we conclude this interview.
Yes.
How often do you come back to Malta? Do you visit? What are your feelings about your home country nowadays?
I love Malta. Of course, the connection of a person. I mean, it's always your home home country. And we still have family there. Our best friends and oldest friends are from there. And I still go down to Malta. Sometimes maybe I'm invited there to play. I've been coming there to do more private concerts or some small events, but we also go down to visit family. Mm-hmm. But of course, I mean, and this is not something new. We've seen a certain change, especially in the landscape, with especially within the building and construction industry, and I think that's the one thing that has quite an impact on me when I'm there, because you always find out, oh, that's a new building, or oh, this must be a new road that leads to I don't know where. So there's a thing which I must say, as someone who loves nature and is so closely connected to nature, I do find a bit worrying, just because of the size of the island itself and how much construction can it take in the future, and is there a plan to try and make it sustainable in a way that there's a balance for the people who work there, because I think a lot of people
and
their well-being.
Here, yes.
You know, their mental health, and these are things that I discuss, and we speak a lot over dinner when we're at friends of ours, and they do talk about the future, especially when they have kids and their kids are growing up within this environment. So these are the things which I sort of think a lot about, and I feel a lot, I should say, because I'm quite sensitive to these things. But of course, I mean, the sea, it's such a beautiful element. I mean, and I sometimes say, thank goodness that there's that, you know, that people can actually find respite by
being by the seaside, swimming,
keeping in touch with the sea.
yes.
I think it's important that look, thinking ahead and looking forward, it's important to have these spaces where people can go out and relax and enjoy these precious pockets of nature and rest, because as human beings we need those spaces. It's important to have that kind of balance, especially in a place like Malta, you know, which is quite busy. I mean, it's exciting on very different levels, because from a cultural point of view and from the music scene, it's such a, you know, there's such a big buzz about so many good things that are happening. So many.
Yes, that is a difference from when you were younger as well. I mean,
absolutely.
There's been a lot of progress there.
Oh yes, it has flourished big time. You know, so I think with all the progress that has been done, it's good to have a sort of balance to all this, just to give people that sense of balance in life. You know, it's all about quality of life in the end.
Renzo, yeah. As always, it's been a fantastic experience. It's been a great pleasure talking to you and learning
Likewise.
About your life in Shetland, and also your experiences back and forth here in Malta, which is your home country. People can stay up to date with your music and your activities via your website, renzospiteri.com. And I suggest that people listen to your music as well via streaming platforms. Renzo, as always, a great pleasure. I hope to see you soon, definitely in January 2026 when you perform here in Malta. I'll be in the audience.
Thank you. Thanks, Colin.
Dak kien Colin Fitz jistaqsi fuq 107.7 Campus. Program li xandar nar ta' sibt fl-erba ta' wara nofsinhar, repetizzjoni il-ħadd fit-tlieta. Program li jitella wkoll fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus 103.7 tistgħu issibuh fis-sezzjoni On Demand. Nerġgħu niltaqgħu bħal-lum ġimgħa fl-istess ħin sa dakinhar, grazzi u saħħa.